This is Dr. Jimmy Nichols, equine nutritionist. On this podcast, we will explore unique cases, debunk popular myths, and break down advanced research data. Join me for a little fun, a lot of science, and some real-world advice for feeding horses. Hey everyone, it's Dr. Jimmy. Welcome to episode 73. Today we're going to be discussing flaxseed and peas in terms of how they can be incorporated into a horse's diet. We're going to talk a little bit about their nutritional value, their benefits, maybe even some limitations or expectations that we feel these ingredients should have and maybe they don't. So this topic was suggested by Jessica, who listens from Canada. And honestly, it's not surprising that a Canadian would ask this question because, you know, a large amount of flaxseed and peas are grown in Canada, along with some of the border states like North Dakota and Montana. So let's start off with flaxseed. From a nutritional perspective, flax is going to be around 20% protein. It's a very high fat ingredient, okay? So it's going to be close to 40% fat. And then it's also going to pack a lot of energy in terms of calories. So the calories are generally going to be around 1,300 kcals per pound. Now, there are a host of benefits that flax provides, and, you know, most of them are going to be centered around their fiber content, their fat content, and then much more specifically on their omega-3 content. So on the fiber front, flax seeds, they contain very highly digestible fiber. In fact, they've been used for centuries in humans. I think I saw something that said that the use of flax has dated all the way back to the Egyptian times. And it was used as a laxative. So the fiber in flax tends to kind of bulk up just a bit when it's exposed to moisture, and it has kind of that mucilage effect, which in humans is really helpful for kind of keeping things flowing in the digestive tract. Now, horses, they eat a lot of fiber naturally, right? So hay and pasture. So that aspect isn't quite as novel for horses, but that high fiber content does make flax a very safe ingredient to feed to a horse. So you're not going to run into issues with, you know, high starch or high sugar levels or any kind of like high glycemic index if you were to feed a fairly large amount of flax to a horse. So, you know, that's about all I have on the fiber front. So let's maybe get into talking about the fat and the omega-3 content. I think a lot of people have kind of a misunderstanding of the term omega-3. So maybe let me clarify that first. Omega-3s, or the term omega-3 is really an umbrella term for a group of fatty acids. And the way you identify that particular group is through their the location of their bond. Okay. So omega-3 fatty acids, basically, they have a double bond at the third carbon atom from the end of the carbon chain. Okay, I know that probably sounds just a little bit too sciencey for a lot of people, but the point that I'm trying to make there is that, you know, there are multiple different omega-3s, okay, and they do not all have the same effect in the body, okay? I think there are maybe 11 different omega-3 fatty acids, but there are a few that are very highly recognized because of the physiologic role that they have within the body. So two of those omega-3s are called EPA and DHA. Okay, so we call them essential fatty acids because the body cannot create them on its own, but the body does require them. Okay, so that means that they have to be consumed from the diet. Right? So EPA and DHA are two omega-3s that are going to be found in marine or fish oils. Now, we know that marine or fish oils are the most concentrated sources of EPA and DHA. But how many of you have ever wondered how a horse lived in the wild and had healthy physiology without ever eating a single fish, right? I've actually had, a decent number of people ask me that question before when I've talked to them about how beneficial fish oils can be for a horse. So the answer lies in a different omega-3 fatty acid called ALA. So ALA is abundant in plant oils, okay? And the neat part about ALA is that the body can actually convert small amounts of ALA into EPA and then DHA. So it's that EPA and the DHA that the body needs. It has to have in order to function correctly. So a horse can't just go eat a fish and get EPA and DHA, right? No. But what they can do is they can eat plants that are high in ALA, okay? And then the body turns that ALA into the EPA and DHA forms that it needs. Okay, so this is where flax really comes into play. Flax naturally contains a very high level of that ALA form of omega-3 fatty acids, okay? So no, flaxseed is not going to be as good as using fish oil in terms of providing those really high levels of those beneficial omega-3s, so the EPA and DHA, but I mean, it's a pretty decent second string player, okay? So let's look at some research and kind of see what we know in terms of feeding flax to horses. So a 2013 study from Colorado State University used flax to investigate the impact of omega-3s on insulin sensitivity in horses. Now, before I go any further, let me back up just for a quick second and explain briefly why anyone would even care to conduct research on the topic of insulin sensitivity. All right, so think about horses that are obese and overfed, right? These horses are predisposed to developing a condition called insulin resistance, or IR for short. So some of the telltale signs of a horse with this condition from a visual or physical appearance, you know, they might have fat pockets on each side of their tail head. They might have a really crusty neck. It might even start to be a little bit floppy or wobbly if you were to grab their neck and kind of rock it back and forth, okay, the top of their neck along their mane line. And then they're also, you know, just generally going to be considered very, very easy keepers. Now, a horse with insulin resistance is actually fairly similar to a human that has type 2 diabetes, okay? So the body becomes insensitive to insulin. And keep in mind that insulin is just, it's a hormone that's responsible for regulating glucose or sugar in the body, okay? So insulin resistance, honestly, it could be a whole podcast topic of its own, so I will save that for a future date. But my point here is that there are more and more horses that are being diagnosed with IR every year. And outside of diet and food restriction, we don't have a whole lot of, you know, what I would say are research-proven nutritional tools to help these horses. But there are some, okay? So psyllium is actually a good option. And I think I'm going to save psyllium as a topic for a future episode. That was actually what I did my graduate research on, was psyllium and its effects on blood glucose and insulin. So I can talk quite a bit on that topic. So I'll save that for a future episode. But outside of psyllium, another kind of promising option are omega-3 fatty acids. Okay, so back to this study from Colorado State. The researchers did a 90-day experiment where they fed a control diet, and then they fed two omega-3 diets. One diet contained 38 grams of flaxseed-sourced omega-3s, and then the other contained 38 grams of marine or fish or algae-sourced omega-3s. The researchers basically pulled blood, so they looked at the blood on day 0, day 30, day 60, and day 90, and basically what they were looking at was, they were evaluating the glucose and the insulin concentrations. And so what they found throughout this study was honestly not earth-shattering, but across the board, basically, they found that there really wasn't a difference in insulin sensitivity between the three groups. So between the control group, the marine or fish oil sourced omega-3s, and then the flaxseed sourced omega-3s, there wasn't a lot of difference. However, when those researchers looked only at the horses that were deemed insulin resistant, they did notice a trend. Okay, so when I say a trend in statistic terms, For those of you who are familiar with p-values, the p-value was 0.09. Okay, so it's not highly significant, but there is a tendency or a trend for that. Okay, and so that trend was that both the marine and the flax supplemented groups tended to be more sensitive to insulin. Okay, so what that means, basically, there was not actual statistical evidence that omega-3s in general would help all horses improve insulin sensitivity, but in a select group of horses that were determined to be insulin resistant already, okay, there is a pretty good chance that these omegas could help those horses, help improve their insulin sensitivity. And then within that group, it actually didn't matter whether those omega-3s came from flaxseed or whether they came from the fish oil. So bottom line, you know, we need further research. Specifically, we need research that uses only horses that are determined to be insulin resistant in a trial where we can actually then see if feeding flax might be a benefit along with the, you know, the fish oil omega-3s, or if one of them might be better than the other. But in the meantime, you know, if you happen to own a horse that is insulin resistant, we know it certainly is not going to hurt those horses, and it could possibly be beneficial to supplement those horses with flaxseed or a fish oil, or better yet, right? You could actually use the Stride Animal Health product called Fish Oil Factor, which contains both, right? So it's a flaxseed-based supplement that has a fish oil concentrate mixed into it. You know, actually, speaking of fish oil factor, that supplement was used in a 2015 study at Sam Houston State University, and they evaluated the effects of omega-3s on inflammation in young exercised horses. Okay, so they basically looked at plasma prostaglandin E2 concentrations, which have been shown to be an important indicator of joint disease. Okay, so the more PGE2 you have in the body, the more likely it is that that horse's joint health is going to be declining or deteriorating. So horses in that study were fed fish oil factor for 9 weeks and then subjected to an exercise program. And the results showed that horses on fish oil factor had lower PGE2 concentrations after 5 weeks and after 9 weeks compared to the control group. Okay, so bottom line, fish oil factor helped reduce inflammation in the body of young horses that are undergoing exercise. From a theoretical standpoint, you know, the hope would be that if you can manage that inflammation, manage those PGE2 concentrations, that you might end up having longer term healthy joints in those horses. Let's see. One other aspect that gets a lot of attention with flaxseed is pregnant mares. Okay, so I don't know how many of you have had a human baby recently, but one thing that doctors are doing these days is putting you on a prenatal vitamin plus a fish oil capsule to get higher levels of EPA and DHA into a mother's body, okay, which can be really beneficial for an infant. So it makes sense that people are trying to do the same thing in their mares as well. A study published actually this year, 2021, looked at mares being fed a marine-derived omega-3 supplement compared to a flaxseed-derived omega-3 supplement. And they wanted to see if supplementing a mare with omega-3s would create higher DHA concentrations in the foal at the time of birth. And the results showed that supplementing with 40 grams of omega-3s from fish or marine sources did indeed improve the DHA concentration in foals. However, 40 grams of omega-3s from flaxseed did not. So if you recall earlier, I mentioned that the body doesn't use the omega-3 ALA directly. Okay, so that's the one that's really abundant in flaxseed. At first, the body has to convert ALA to EPA and then DHA. So that conversion process is just not real effective. It's not that efficient, okay? So, you know, my best guess is that in this particular study, again, my best guess is that by the time the mares, their body converted the ALA from that flaxseed, into actual usable forms of DHA, there just probably, you know, maybe there wasn't enough left to then pass along to that baby. So bottom line, if you're trying to provide omega-3s to a baby by way of supplementing the mare, okay, you can accomplish that with fish oil, but you're not going to be able to accomplish that with flaxseed. The last study I want to talk about before moving on to peas is one from 2014 where researchers at Colorado State looked at the effects on joint synovial fluid of horses that were supplemented with omega-3s provided by marine sources compared to omega-3s provided by flaxseed. So the supplements were fed at a rate of 38 grams. They did that for 90 days. And the results showed that the horses that were fed that fish oil or that marine sourced omega-3 had higher EPA and DHA levels in their joint synovial fluid. Okay. Now, when they looked at the flaxseed group, EPA actually wasn't detectable at all in the joint fluid. So, you know, the other thing is the marine group showed a tendency to have lower inflammatory markers than the flax and the control group. So, you know, back to that PGE2 marker that I had mentioned in that Sam Houston study, the Colorado State researchers looked at that same thing and they found that, you know, there were lower levels of that in the groups that were fed the marine sourced omega-3s. So, bottom line, if you're wanting to use omega-3s to reduce inflammation in joints, you can rely on fish oil to get that done, but flaxseed probably is not a reliable source for that. And again, it probably is related to the fact that the body has to convert the ALA in that flaxseed, and you know that process just is not that efficient. Now, you know, I think since I'm on this topic already, I'm actually going to mention a fourth omega-3 chain to you guys. It's called ETA. Okay, so this form of omega-3 has been researched in horses, in humans, and in dogs, and it has shown extreme promise in terms of relieving pain and stiffness that's associated with arthritis or sore joints. You know, so on the topic of joint health, if you're hoping to use an omega-3 supplement for joint support, I would tend to go with something that contains the New Zealand green-lipped mussel, okay, which is really high in this specific ETA form of omega-3s. Okay, so I just want to note, I'm saying ETA, not EPA. So there's a little bit of difference in there. And I will put these forms in the show notes as well, just in case anybody wants to do a little bit further investigating on their own. If you do want to incorporate this fourth omega-3 chain that is beneficial in joint health, I really like a product called Rewind by Stride Animal Health. In fact, Stride Animal Health also offers Rewind in a human capsule that I personally take on a daily basis to help with the arthritis in my knee. So I actually take three capsules a day. And I honestly, if I go for a week, if I run out of it and forget to reorder and I go a week without it, I notice the pain creeping back into my hands, my fingers, my knuckles, and then also into my knee, which I've had three reconstructive surgeries on. So I've got early arthritis developing in my knee. So I am a personal believer just because of my experience with it. And, I mean, I've been taking it for probably 5 years now, 4 years, 5 years. And it is the one supplement along with a probiotic that I definitely, and a postbiotic I've got. So I've got three supplements that I take every day, a probiotic, a postbiotic, and then, this New Zealand green lip muscle capsule called Rewind. And the other cool thing, that capsule can actually be used on dogs. And we've seen a lot of success with people, with their old dogs, their old companions that, you know, have really been struggling to get around. They're not moving very well. They've got arthritis, you know, maybe they've got hip issues. They've put them on these capsules and really seen some good improvements. Okay. Let's hit on peas real quick. So field peas are typically grown in cooler regions of the Northern Plains. So, you know, places like North Dakota and Canada would be pretty prime growing regions. Peas are going to be, you know, between 22 to 24, maybe 26% protein. They're going to be about 1.5% lysine. They'll have about 1500 kcals per pound. I think they're roughly 1.5-1.6% fat, and then about 50% starch. Okay, so 48 to 52 ish is kind of the range. They are often used as a replacement or a partial replacement for oats because of their high energy content. That high starch level gives them a lot of energy. So a study by North Dakota State University in conjunction with the Research Extension Center there in Dickinson, they did a two-year study feeding peas to yearling horses in place of oats to determine whether or not, you know, they were an acceptable replacement to oats. And they found that the young horses, they readily consumed the peas. Okay, there weren't any palatability issues with them. And they actually found that the horses that were on the peas had a very similar growth response to the horses that were on the oats. And I believe that they achieved those similar responses with just a slightly lower feeding rate of the peas. So, you know, peas are a really good source of protein. They're also a really good source of energy or calories for a horse. They contain a good amount of lysine, which is a really important amino acid. I would say the one drawback in peas is the starch content. So I generally wouldn't recommend feeding a large amount of peas just because they can be over 50% NSC. Okay, so you know, feeding them in large volumes like pounds, right, might be a little bit dangerous. So if you are going to feed them, you know, the smaller rates are definitely going to be better. So think in terms of grams, not pounds, when you're dealing with peas. You know, and the reason for that is just, you know, as I've talked about in episodes in the past, high starch levels can be dangerous for horses with metabolic sensitivities to starches and sugars. So, you know, for example, it would not be a good idea to feed peas to a horse that deals with PSSM or, you know, I mean, or a horse, you know, that ties up. So if you're dealing with a horse that ties up, don't go out and find peas, right? Don't try to avoid peas. also, you know, since starch level is directly related to excitability in horses, you might not want to feed peas if your horse already has, you know, kind of a hot or excitable attitude. So unfortunately, there's not a lot of definitive research out there on peas. But I do suspect that there are going to be some more studies actually start to appear because peas really are gaining some traction in equine markets, especially for those markets that are looking for, you know, alternative protein sources. So people who are really searching out, you know, the soy-free diet or the non-GMO, peas are really starting to gain some popularity in those areas. So I think that's a wrap for today. I really appreciate you guys' questions, and I really appreciate everyone that tunes in each week. I think right now about 2,000 of you are listening to these episodes in the first few days that they're being released, which I think is pretty cool. And then we have some episodes that have actually reached over 5,000 listens, 5,000 downloads, which for a topic this specific, you know, equine nutrition, I think that's pretty incredible. So I think that speaks volumes to this audience base. I think you guys really are, you know, what I would consider a lifelong learner. You are appreciating and enjoying, you know, expanding your own education and broadening your knowledge on something that can have a really direct impact on your horse. So I want to thank you guys for listening. Thank you for sharing with your friends. And, you know, as you do share out on those social media channels, please do not forget to use the hashtag #FeedRoomChemist. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Feed Room Chemist. If you like what you hear, be sure to share with your friends, post to social media, or give us a review. And as Winston Churchill used to say, no hour of life is wasted that is spent in the saddle. So go saddle up.